Welcome back to another episode of The Art of Healing. I am your host and therapist friend, Trevor Hansen. Today on the show, this is a wonderful follow-up to last week's episode. We're talking again about EMDR, but we're talking about a way that really anybody can access EMDR. The problem that we often face in mental health is that it's pretty limited as far as access goes because there's different licensing laws per state, per region. It's also, it can be really expensive, especially if you are finding clinicians who don't take insurance or if you don't have insurance yourself for mental health. And so my friend Jeff, who I have on the show today, and I am apologizing to Jeff right now if he's listening to this. I've been wrestling with knowing how to pronounce your last name, Jeff. It's Tijek. I'm hoping that's right. But Jeff, he is the founder of Virtual EMDR, an EMDR solution that allows you to work through trauma, work through the protocols of EMDR from your own home at a fraction of the price of what it's going to cost to go see a clinician. And we talk about in this episode, you know, when is virtual EMDR a good fit? When is it maybe not such a good fit? And how can people learn more about what this is about? And I honestly, at first, I'll be honest, I told Jeff this too. I was a little skeptical. I was like, virtual EMDR, like by yourself, self-guided, does that actually work? But it's really cool. He talks about in this episode, the data behind what he's doing. Through the program, people are self-reporting their improvement or their results along the way. And it's a completely anonymous, as he clarifies, but the persons who are reporting their experience are really showing good trends within the data that say, hey, virtual EMDR is a real good resource. So this is a fun podcast where we're talking about an innovative solution to introduce into the mental health world, because I think that we need some innovation, and this is really, really exciting to see this. And just as a reminder, this podcast is not therapy. It's not a substitute for therapy or any of the sort. And if you would like to reach out to me, or you'd like to learn more about my resources, my therapy, or you'd like to look into my new online course for couples, which is launching in, it'll probably be out next month. I don't have an exact date. There's a few things I need to get buttoned down, but please go to my Instagram or TikTok. You can find the link in my bio there. Also in the link, there's links in the podcast description or show notes here on the show. Additionally, I have included a link to virtual EMDR within my own links and the link in this podcast. If you're interested in using virtual EMDR, please use that link. Disclaimer, I am an affiliate for Jeff now. After our conversation, I wanted to get on board and work with him. So that is one way that you can support this podcast and help us to continue to produce episodes at no cost to you or the public. So if you're interested in virtual EMDR, please go use that link and hopefully you can find some amazing resources there. So without further ado, let's jump in and have our conversation with Jeff about virtual EMDR. Jeff, thanks for joining me today. It's exciting to have this conversation. We've been talking for a little while about meeting up and talking about virtual EMDR, and I'm excited because I just did an episode on EMDR with like an EMDR trainer. She does a ton of work. I don't know if you caught that episode or not, but this is cool because it's kind of like another chapter into EMDR today. Thank you for being on the show.
It's my pleasure to be here, Trevor. And yeah, I did. I actually was listening to that episode just this morning.
So, awesome.
I'm caught up on that for sure. So yeah, it's great to be here.
That's great. Well, Jeff, just so our audience gets to know you a little bit better, tell us about yourself and your platform, just kind of a little brief overview of who you are.
No pressure, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is like the job interview question. So tell us about yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I had in-person EMDR therapy about 10 years ago. And at the time, I was working doing research and writing on medical technology for urology clinics, cancer clinics, and orthopedic clinics. And I had in-person EMDR because I had horrible PTSD from
Really?
my childhood. Yeah. And I had a crushing fear of flying as well. And I couldn't really seem to move my life forward or connect with a direction that I wanted to go. So this is in Boulder, Colorado. I had a friend who mentioned EMDR, and at the time I'd never heard of it at all. And, you know, he mentioned that it's a trauma therapy and how helpful it is and how it's not a, you know, a therapy where you sit and talk. It's, you know, more about changing your brain, you know, the neurons in your brain, how your thought processes work. So I tried EMDR, and it was with a therapist in person, and it was absolutely life-changing for me. We worked through my childhood trauma issues, and those issues went from being explosively emotional, things that I couldn't deal with, to just things that I was unhappy about that happened in my past. You know, they were more of normal bad memories. Through doing... Go ahead, please.
I was going to ask, what was that looking like? Because you say, you know, I was having these explosive reactions. And, you know, I did a video a long time ago about a lot, like kind of a parallel between trauma and the idea of like having a funny bone, and nobody else in the whole wide world has one. And every time you hit your elbow, it looks pretty insignificant. But then for you, it like sends this crazy shock through your body and it hurts. And it's just like, gosh, dang it, this is the worst. What kind of scenarios and what kind of reactions were you experiencing prior to treatment, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah. I'd like to tell a story to sort of answer that question.
Please.
I arranged to do some long-term traveling in Europe, and I didn't even know that I had PTSD at this point because I carefully kept my life in a jar. Always knew what was coming up. There were no surprises, etc. And when I went to Europe, you know, and my intention was to spend 90 days in Europe, it was chaotic. Every day was different. Every location was different. I never knew what to expect. I never knew what my next meal would be, all that kind of stuff that people love about traveling. And for me, it was totally overwhelming. And the PTSD symptoms inside me just exploded. And I found myself, I was in Mallorca, which is an island. It's owned by Spain. It's north of Africa. It's a desert island, and I was just so overwhelmed. I have one particular memory of a symptom that was manifesting where I just wanted to punch a brick wall until my hands were broken and bleeding and just became stumps. I was so overwhelmed with the emotion. I didn't actually do that.
Yeah.
But that's how I felt. And, the instability for me of traveling long-term in Europe like that, and I just did not expect it, just caused an explosion in PTSD symptoms and trauma. And even when I came back to the United States, you know, I remember one particular incident driving down the interstate, and I'm just punching the steering wheel of the car while I drive and yelling about things at the top of my lungs. And I was, it just made me recognize, wow, something's really, really, really wrong here. And that opened the door for me to examine my personal trauma and to treat it. And that's eventually, like I said earlier, I met a friend who mentioned EMDR, and that landed me in a therapist's office to get EMDR.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. What's it like now? Like looking back on those experiences, you know, looking at what you're doing now, and we'll get more into, you know, what you're doing now and looking at the treatment that you went through and kind of just, I don't know, what's it like to remember those sitting here and telling me those stories? What happens for you when you think about those old times?
Yeah. What EMDR does, whether it's with a therapist, guided EMDR, or using virtual EMDR and doing self-guided sessions, is it takes traumatic and charged memory, that means memory that can come back and upset you at almost any time, and turns the volume down on that and turns it into a normal bad memory.
Yeah.
Normal, whatever that means. So for example, remembering the horrible car accident you were in where the bone was jutting out of your leg will never be a good memory.
Yeah,
You know,
no.
it'll never be, wow, that was a happy day. But what EMDR can do is make that into a bad memory that doesn't haunt you on a regular basis if you have PTSD over that particular incident. So.
So, like, and a lot of times it's associated with stimulus, some sort of trigger, like a smell, a sight, things like that, to kind of associate the current experience with a past memory. And then that past memory is something that you're just, your nervous system, your body, your brain just can't handle. And so that's maybe what you were seeing in those moments, right? Where you're just starting to feel out of control.
Yeah, and one of the things that I really noticed about my trauma and PTSD symptoms before I worked with them is I could go from 0 to 100 like that. I mean, go from 0 to, I want to punch you in the face for what you just said, Trevor, and just, you know, very
Wow.
explosive emotions. And I'm not a violent person. I never did punch anyone in the face, but you can just feel it come over your whole body when you're having an episode of PTSD. And I do a lot of work with military and vets, and this is one of the things that they talk about with PTSD all the time. They're standing in line at 7-Eleven, and why the hell is this line taking so long? And why is the receipt machine broken? And by the time they get up to the front of the line, they just want to explode on the guy working at 7-Eleven. And you know, for most people, it's just mildly annoying that they have to wait a longer time. But for people with severe PTSD, again, you can go from 0 to 100 in no time.
I think we see that a lot manifest in personal relationships of individuals who are, coming home from a tour overseas, or they've served in, like you said, first responder positions. And it's like, man, dad comes home, mom comes home, and all of a sudden it's like we got a different person here. And really, I mean, it's like we got a different brain here, more like it. It's a brain that's been injured in a way through traumatic experiences. But what you're telling us today is that you're in a similar position, and that EMDR is one of the methods that you used in order to kind of heal from that, come back to, or come to a place for the first time of feeling a sense of calm and control in those moments. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And you know, that's a good opportunity for me to sort of tell my story. I had in-person EMDR in Colorado with a really nice therapist. And over the course of the, I think, 8 sessions we did about 5 sessions on PTSD and 3 sessions on my fear of flying, and it was unbelievably transformative. I could tell right away that I felt differently about the things that had happened to me in my childhood. I wasn't happy about those things because they were incredibly ugly, but they didn't charge me in the same way anymore. You know, I always think a hallmark of PTSD is you're washing your hands and you can't stop thinking about something bad that happened 30 years ago. You're eating lunch and you can't stop thinking about something that happened bad that happened 30 years ago. And through in-person EMDR with this therapist, they just sort of turned into more acceptable bad memories that didn't bother me in the same way. The other thing is that really blew me away was it really helped me deal with my fear of flying. Now, yeah, in order to deal with the fear of flying, at some point you have to get on an airplane.
For sure, for sure.
So I did the EMDR sessions with him, and then I got on an airplane for the first time in 10 or 11 years, and it was a piece of cake. Yeah. And I'd like to point out that right now, as you can tell from my accent, I'm an American, but this is jungle outside. I live overseas. I live in Singapore right now. And thanks to EMDR and thanks to dealing with my fear of flying through EMDR, I have been in and lived in more than 30 countries around the world in the last 7 years. I've been everywhere. And that would have never been possible before, with my fear of flying. You know, I've gone from somebody who was terrified of flying to somebody who's mildly uncomfortable at times, just like everyone else. I mean, when you have
Right.
turbulence on the plane, you're, I think basically everyone on the plane is mildly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in fact, I just got back from the United States. I was on a 16-hour flight 4 days ago, and so I'm quite comfortable with flying, and I have EMDR to thank for all that.
Wow.
And just one more thing. During these in-person EMDR sessions, I got the idea. I said, you know what? Somebody can figure out a way to automate this process. Somebody can figure out a way to put the questions he's asking me, into a program on the internet. And someone can also figure out a way to take the eye movements or the bilateral stimulation that he's doing with me
Right.
and create software to do that. And that idea is how virtual EMDR was born. It was
Wow.
sometime after that I hired some teenager in Eastern Europe. I don't even remember where he was from, and I paid him, a couple $100 to create the first eye movement tool software that we had this before the company even existed. And I hired somebody at the University of Colorado to start working with me on the research end, and I started researching EMDR protocols, and slowly the door opened, and that's how this company was born. It's because I went to an
Wow.
in-person EMDR therapist, and I was just lucky enough to get the idea. And here's the really cool thing. Now, some 10 years later, virtual EMDR, my company provides more EMDR sessions than any other organization in the world at this point. So, I mean,
Wow.
it really turned out to be a great thing.
No way. That's wild, man. That's super cool. What
Yeah.
a I guess there's a lot that probably went into from, that first little computer program, starting to do some of the research. What were some of the maybe the findings that you were digging up along the way that were either surprising or maybe just like hard moments? Like, okay, this is challenging to build. 'Cause I'm not gonna lie, when I first heard you reach out to me about virtual EMDR, the therapist side of me was like a little skeptical. I'm like, huh, I wonder how that works. And I don't know, like what were some of the challenges in making it work to like seeing results and making sure that it's like a viable and legitimate product?
Yeah, and I understand your skepticism. And the truth is, there are a percentage of people or
Yeah.
clients out there who are not a good fit for virtual EMDR. They
Right.
need a therapist sitting next to them to guide them through the process. They have difficulty, dealing with or processing their own negative emotions without someone right next to them to,
Right.
theoretically hold their hand through that. On the other hand, a large percentage of people who use virtual EMDR, they love the fact that there isn't a therapist there, that they can do it when they want. And we find that police officers, firefighters, military vets, that whole population, they prefer virtual EMDR
Really?
because they don't have to sit down and tell a stranger, hey, Trevor, here's some bad stuff that happened to me. I want to talk about my personal life. They can
Right.
keep that part private.
Right.
So, to sort of answer your question, though, the initial challenges of developing virtual EMDR were without end. Initially, we followed a very standard EMDR protocol. The creator of EMDR, Francine Shapiro, her standard protocol. But we found that that was way too complicated for people doing it on their own. And also, the sessions were way too long following the standard protocol. We had to find a way to develop a product that was user-friendly,
Yeah.
but was open enough to be understood by a lot of different people. And a product that would ask you the same standard questions that an EMT would ask. How are you feeling? And what issue do you want to work on? And when you think of the issue, where do you feel it in your body? All those kind of questions that a therapist would ask, we replicate in the virtual EMDR program. And, the first 3 years we were a company, we made no money, we lost money, and we made horrible products that were too complicated and too long and too confusing. Really, one other thing, really quick. When I first got this idea, and I'm so lucky, I'm so blessed for this, my initial idea was that if I can develop and launch this product for free and help a handful of people, then that's it. I've done exactly what I wanted to do. And then I just got lucky and have been able to, make it something that, I can put food on the table with. So, one more thing really quick about the question you just answered, about challenges of developing this, and I think this is great, is we ended up reaching out to volunteers in Colorado, at Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous, some of these 12-step programs, and just saying, hey, would you be interested in trying this out? And, doing a survey, afterwards to see how it went. And it was so great that people in the 12-step community said, yeah, sure, I want to try it, because people in the 12-step community tend to be people with mental health issues.
Totally.
And so that was our initial group of test subjects, were was
Really?
volunteers from the 12-step community. Yeah, and that was in the very early days when it was the worst program ever, before we figured out what we were doing.
Well, what a cool group to work with, 'cause yeah, 12-step addiction recovery, hand in hand goes addiction and trauma. That emotional dysregulation, that seeking for an escape from those traumatic symptoms, from that overwhelming feeling. And what's my escape? Well, it can be alcohol, it can be drugs, it can be sexual addiction, like whatever it is. And so, what a perfect little group to work with. Even with that imperfect product, like what was the feedback you were getting at that point? Because you were saying, I mean, you even just called it, like, I think the word was terrible or something like that. What happened?
So we had a lot of the volunteers come back to us and say, this is really good. Wow, it's so helpful. It's working so well. But then almost universally, they said, but this is too complicated. There are too many videos to watch. There's too much to read. I don't understand this. I don't understand that. And what that allowed us to do was look at these problems that these initial test subjects were mentioning, and change it, make certain things more simple, and making it so that the sessions didn't necessarily take as long, or allowing the test subject to have more choices in where their EMDR eye movement therapy session was going. So, but again, almost universally, they said that they really liked the program, but we were really clear at this point that it needed some major changes and major tweaks. And this is what we did for the first 2, 3 years, was just try to fix it, try to get the right program.
With that, I'm curious, along the way, I'm sure you've maybe started to spot trends of who it's a good fit for. We talked about fit for a second there in the beginning. Are there certain types of trauma or intensity of trauma that it's either a good fit or not such a good fit? Does it determine, like, based on the actual experience itself, or is it more personality type? What's the fit look like?
Yeah, so this is, frankly, this is a perfect question. First, I want to say that when you sign up for virtual EMDR, you have access to all of our protocols. So we have the standard protocol, which you can sort of use for anything: trauma and PTSD protocol, anxiety protocol, depression protocol, addictions protocol, and fears and phobias protocol. So you really, there's layered in there. There are very different approaches to doing EMDR. And this, by the way, is one of the things that those initial test subjects help us figure out, is that we needed to here for people to use. Now, as far as the ideal candidates for using virtual EMDR versus people who don't use EMDR, you know, I think there's a pretty sharp, or I'm sorry, who cannot use virtual EMDR or who need EMDR with a therapist, I definitely think there's a pretty sharp dividing line there.
Yeah.
Before I answer your question, you know, I'd like to mention that we have potentially more data on EMDR sessions than any other company in the world. Hmm. We anonymously track the results of all the different EMDR sessions that we do, and we can see through that tracking how much it's helping. So
wow.
you're going from a distress level of 10 where you're just freaking out to a distress level of 6 by the end of the session or whatever it is. We can track all that kind of stuff. So this has allowed us to really carefully see the kind of people that it's helping versus the kind of people that might need to be referred to an in-person therapist so that they can get more direct attention. But
yeah.
The people who are really benefiting most from virtual EMDR are the people who step up and do what the program says. They read the instructions.
Gotcha.
They take the time to do the sessions. They have a plan as far as what kind of stuff they want to work on. And then they take it seriously and get it done. Those are the kind of people who email me all the time and say, this is such a great program. I feel totally different. You know, so glad that we did this. On the other hand, you know, with respect, the people who email me and say, this program isn't working for me at all. And then they'll have some questions and it's really clear they didn't read the instructions at all.
Yeah.
You know, or it's really clear that they tried one session and quit. So people who want to do it, you know, want to follow through, these are the people that get amazing results with this program. You know, I just one random example really quick. We have a grief and loss protocol as well.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you lose a relationship, if someone dies, if you get a divorce, and, you know, a perfect example of this is, you know, there's a guy in Utah who emailed me and who was working on, his wife left and took the kids and he was devastated. And, you know, he did about a dozen sessions, virtual EMDR sessions within a month. And he just felt way better as far as being able to accept what happened and that it wasn't changing. And just the level of his grief was really able to drop. So he's a perfect example of somebody who took it seriously, did 12 sessions in 30 days. So,
yeah.
That's the kind of person or people who do well with virtual EMDR.
Yeah. Yeah. Really getting after it and making it happen. But it doesn't seem to be correlated with like the type of trauma as you've seen, or it's mainly just based on client motivation.
Client motivation. Yes. The type of trauma. No, that has not been our experience, but I will say that people with much, much more severe trauma, maybe virtual EMDR isn't a good fit, because when you have severe trauma, complex PTSD, you've really got a lot going on. You might be an addict as well, and you might be unemployed, and you might be semi-homeless, and all this stuff is happening.
Right.
That's a different situation. You need to talk to somebody. You need to sort of guide your way through the therapeutic process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's a cool option for somebody who, you know, isn't quite in a position to want to sign up for in-person therapy or financially a position. Like motivation, first of all, sometimes it's hard to be like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go talk to a stranger about all this stuff. But the second piece, it's freaking expensive to go to therapy. I mean, I say that, I'm a therapist. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I get it all the time. So, it feels like, you know, anytime we can make therapy more accessible, that's awesome. That's a big plus for the world, because in general, it's hard because a lot of insurance doesn't necessarily cover it, especially, EMDR is going to be more covered than some of the other treatments because it's pretty evidence-based. But a lot of times you're also like cash pay and other things like that. And it just makes it hard for people to get into therapy these days.
Yeah. So let me say that, first of all, the cost of seeing a therapist is worth it.
Totally.
It's really important to sit down and unpack your stuff and talk to a therapist about what's going on. Second, EMDR will really fix your symptoms of anxiety or your symptoms of, the overwhelming grief you're feeling or the PTSD. But what EMDR or virtual EMDR will not do is let you unpack the past, let you sit down and talk to a therapist and say, when I was a soldier in Iraq, I lost my leg, and it was the most horrible thing ever, and I've never really spoken to somebody about it, or whatever it is, that's a made-up story, and talk to somebody about what happened. So one of the ideal situations is that you can have regular appointments with a traditional talk therapist and also do virtual EMDR on the side. In fact, one of the things that we see is we have a lot of therapists who will meet and talk to their client and then assign them some virtual EMDR sessions. And then the next week, when the client comes back, talk to them and say, hey, how did the virtual EMDR go? Is it helping you? What do you want to talk about? So I can't emphasize enough how much in-person therapy is worth the cost to be able to sit down and talk to somebody.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, especially if you have somebody there to kind of go through things like, trauma, especially relational trauma, early trauma. It's going to come with a lot of reframing that needs to happen and kind of reality checking in a lot of ways, not just from the nervous system, because basically the EMDR kind of helps the nervous system have a bit of a reality check and say, hey, that's not the case anymore. You're safe, you're good. But the mental thought processes of, beliefs about self, like I'm worthless. I deserve what I got. I deserve that mistreatment. Like all these things that come with trauma, those I feel like are so important to work through with somebody else. To help kind of get things to a realistic perspective, a belief that actually serves you and it reflects the truth, which is not that, you're worthless, that you deserved all that kind of stuff and all of that. I think that's maybe where a lot of that talk therapy has a lot of value in couple or in combination with EMDR.
And one of the, you mentioned talking to your therapist about the past or about things that happened to you. One of the absolutely stunning side effects of EMDR, whether it's with a therapist or using the virtual EMDR self-guided program, is that you get in touch with memories again. Somewhere in your brain is, a whole bunch of old files. They're in there, but that doesn't mean that you can't access them. And one of the things that happens with EMDR is it brings memories back. You start to remember things more clearly and in more detail, and you'll end up getting these intense dreams. Not necessarily bad dreams, but dreams about things that you had long forgotten. Vivid dreams where the purples are such a deep purple and you can see the patterns in the wood grain, and you wake up and you say, wow, that was so intense. So one of the great things, though, about EMDR is remembering those childhood memories. So for me, speaking for me personally, through doing EMDR and also doing virtual EMDR sessions on myself, I can recall so many things that I didn't remember, the kind of vacuum cleaner that we had when I was a 4-year-old, and memories about my first dog, and really things that helped me put all the pieces together as an adult. So that's, and what you mentioned about seeing a therapist in addition to doing virtual EMDR is, or doing EMDR in general, is when you do EMDR and the memories start to come back, you can go see your therapist the following week and say, hey, I'm now remembering in detail these things that happened, and I think that they're significant, and really get a clearer picture on your history.
I mean, if the clearer that picture is, I feel like that's such a vital tool. Because somebody might be listening here and be like, why would I want that? But I see it especially applicable. I do a lot of relational counseling. I do individual a ton as well. My platform's dedicated to couples, obviously, so you've probably picked that up. But I do a ton of individual. But within the space of a relationship and a theme that we've been talking about a lot on this podcast, and in a lot of my posts, is this idea of kind of like the attachment theory, the idea that says our most early foundational relationships with our primary caregivers creates this pattern for how things are going to go in the future. And a lot of times that is is manifest in ways, but there's no memory associated with it. And it feels kind of clueless and it's difficult. And we talked about it on my last podcast, which you just listened to. So you're probably familiar with that idea, but I think it's so cool when someone can actually remember maybe an incident with a parent or a brother or sister or what have you. And they can go, oh my goodness, it kind of makes sense. Like why I feel this way and what happens for me. And that becomes a mental resource or a tool when they're in that position and they're feeling that familiar fear come up, they can go back and say, oh, hold on. This is, again, it's reality check. That's not what's happening here. I know why I feel this way. And because I know it, I then have a choice to react maybe differently than I have in the past. And so I think, yeah, having access to early memories, that's a huge resource.
Yeah. And this is, I did listen to that last episode, you know, where you were talking about early childhood development. And
yeah,
that's it. That's exactly what happened to me. I mean, on the outside, I had as a child, I had a very normal life. I, you know, a nice suburban home, my father owned a business, but the thing that you couldn't see in early development is what I really had is, you know, parents who didn't know how to connect with me, parents who were too focused on their own things, running their business or going to college or their hobbies or whatever.
Right.
And that, you know, had a profound effect on my sense of self in adulthood. And it manifests itself in you know, trauma that desperately had to be dealt with in adulthood. So yeah, what you're saying is you're really hitting the nail on the head when you say that.
Yeah, yeah, it's important. This is awesome. You were also mentioning something to me, and I want to make sure that we talk about it. Is the access that you give to certain demographics, such as first responders or vets or whatever else like that. Tell me about that again.
Yeah, so we've given virtual EMDR for free to somewhere north of 2,000 people. And that would be military vets or active military, first responders, law enforcement. We even give it away for free to clergy, like, you know, priests, rabbis, any sort of clergy, because they deal with some pretty difficult things. If any of those people email us, we'll respond by sending them an access code that will allow them to have access to the program as a, you know, sort of a way of saying thank you to people who are putting themselves at risk for helping the community.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. That is really awesome. You say 2,000. How many people have been through virtual EMDR so far?
So we do somewhere north of 5,000 sessions per month.
Okay.
Is what we provide. And boy, it's really hard to guess. We've had, I think, 20,000 plus clients at this point in total. Yeah. So again, you know, I said earlier when we were talking, at this point, we do more EMDR sessions than any other organization in the world.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So we're, well, you know,
go ahead. I'm curious, what is the data looking like that you're getting back? You say that there's some positive information. I love that you're able to collect this anonymous data. It's like, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you're reporting, but I got access to just the self-report, like within the program or okay.
So that's exactly it. During your virtual EMDR session, there are a series of questions that are asked to you that we can track the answers to those questions. So in EMDR, there's what's called SUDS, or subjective units of distress. And right. that means how bad I feel about the thing that's going on with me. A 0 would mean no distress. A 10 would be distress through the roof. And during your virtual EMDR sessions, clients are asked to rate their level of emotional distress about various issues. So what we can do is literally take those numbers and plug them in and get data like, on average, our anxiety protocol is working this well for people, or on average, our PTSD protocol is working this well for people. What we're seeing, and this is a very broad spectrum average, is that the units of distress on average go down about 3.5 points with every session. And I'm basing that on, I think, data on 50,000 plus sessions, something like that. I mean, data on a lot of sessions. Is so we track that on. And I can't show you right now because of the format, but we even have, I could show you this amazing graph that shows exactly how the virtual EMDR helps people over time.
Man, that's cool. That's cool. I mean, I think about some people that I work with and they're like, man, I could take 3 points less in distress. and if that's all I ever get, you know, I'll take 1 point, man. I just want something to help me. You know, that's a question I actually ask sometimes in line. So there's different models of therapy for those who aren't necessarily familiar with that. But one of them is solution focused therapy. And in that therapy treatment approach, we look at, okay, you know, I feel a 8 in distress on the daily, or I feel a 6 motivated, whatever we're working on, doesn't matter what we're measuring. But one of the questions is like, what's going to take us from just a 6 to a 6.5 or like an 8 to like an 8.1 or a 7.9? Like, let's move the dial just a tiny bit. Like, what's one thing that works for you? Yeah. And because even if we can get that 1 degree difference, the systemic effect on your life, you know, that butterfly effect is huge. So I think about, you know, 3 points on average on a session sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah. And one of the other really cool things about virtual EMDR versus traditional in-person EMDR with a therapist is that you can do a session whenever symptoms come up. So if I'm doing EMDR with a therapist and I have a problem, I have to wait until next Tuesday at 3 p.m. or whatever to do EMDR and to address that. On the other hand, with virtual EMDR, I can shut the bedroom door, open up my laptop, sit down for 25 minutes and do a session and feel better. And, you know, I have to tell you, I use virtual EMDR right now in my life. And let me give you an example of that.
Yeah.
My wife is a wonderful, smart, amazing person. But like any marriage, once in a while, we go and we yell at each other and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, which is normal. That's how marriage is, fighting. And after the fight, you know, a lot of those old PTSD feelings will come up and I'm feeling explosive on inside and I'm upset. And that inner dialogue is going, you know, I'm so tired of this, blah, 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 all that kind of, you know, toxic stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the amazing things about having access to a program like virtual EMDR is I can do a session on the spot. I can do the eye movements, the bilateral stimulation, the processing,
that's
and
cool.
really sort of put things in perspective and sort of climb down off that emotional ladder and feel better about myself. So that's it's one of the great advantages that there are advantages to doing EMDR on your own and disadvantages to doing EMDR on your own. And one of the great advantages is you can do it whenever you want to, whenever things come up for you.
Yeah, that's huge. I think about, you know, in my own history, I talk a bit about, you know, a season of my life that kind of transitioned me into being a therapist. I was working for Tesla before and things. And during that time, you know, I was experiencing trauma-like symptoms from a handful of sources. And I remember, you know, I had lost my job around that same time, got laid off with like a bunch of other managers. And so I was part-time just going and knocking doors for this company that was just getting signatures for politicians that were like trying to get on the ballot basically. And they just needed so many signatures. And I would go and I just knock doors and do that. And I would do that and I'd mountain bike. And I swear, man, just the bilateral stimulation and like focusing on it. Like I would notice like my foot like hitting the ground on each side as I'd walk from house to house or like riding my bike, like feeling my legs go back and forth. And it would just kind of zone me in, kind of calm me down. And I think, you know, a little EMDR is better than no EMDR, like whatever version it is, like that bilateral movement, even in itself, I think is helpful or therapeutic. I don't have any evidence to back that up. Maybe there's some out there, but I feel like I've experienced that.
Yeah. That's definitely the case. And EMDR is something that you can teach yourself. You can teach yourself, this is not as good as EMDR with a therapist. This is not as good as virtual EMDR, but you can teach yourself to do things like to tap back and forth on your knees
Yeah.
while having certain thought patterns, because in doing so, EMDR is all about stimulating the hemispheres of your brain, right, left, while focusing on certain memories and things that you need to deal with or things that you would like to feel. So EMDR, what you're saying about experiencing that the back and forth on your bicycle, that is definitely valid. EMDR is something that you can teach yourself
Yeah.
so that it's, you know, it becomes something that you can basically do anytime.
Yeah. Man, I got so wild into it. I remember I would record these little like it's funny. I would record these voice clips of myself, basically just like kind of like repeating affirming ideas or like things that I was just kind of working on. And I'd like put the I can't remember the name of it. It's like buy something beats, like binaural beats. I don't remember the words, but basically just this like
biurnal, I think.
Maybe.
Think.
I'll have to look it up. But it's. I would like play that in the background. I like mix it on GarageBand. This is so funny. I've never told anybody about this actually. And I would go mountain biking, and while I was climbing up the hill in like the difficult times, I would just like listen to that and like repeat it in my mind. And just like, it was like my own version of whatever EMDR thing that I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed to help. I mean, I still can remember some of the things that, you know, like that I recorded and that I said and that like are important to me now. And it's kind of cool when you just like actively pursue your own healing, even if you know, are just throwing stuff against the wall. I think that that's where the big motivation or the big change comes from, in line with what we were talking about earlier. You know, looking at client factors or sorry, factors of change in therapy, we've measured them in the world of therapy. What influences change the most? And kind of tied in first and second place for traditional in-person therapy or teletherapy is client factors, specifically motivation. And then the other one is the alliance between you and the therapist. But that motivation, it's huge. It changes a ton about the outcome of treatment.
Yeah, I agree. And I just wanted to mention shameless plug really quick, because you mentioned binaural beats.
Yeah.
Totally free, zero charge. Virtual EMDR also has a Binaural Beats app. You can find it on the Apple Store, iTunes. It's not called iTunes anymore. They changed that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And also on Google Play.
Oh, really?
And yeah, you can think of it as sort of like EMDR Junior. It comes with some basic instructions what to think about. You wear headphones or earbuds, and you can control right on your phone the volume and what kind of tone you're listening to and how fast it's going. And anyways, virtual EMDR app, you can find that out there for free on the web if people
Man,
are interested.
That's cool. Yeah, I'll have to put a link to it in like the show notes in the description so people can check that out for sure.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, Jeff, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. It's fun to discover this resource, because I was a bit suspicious, I will say, and I was a bit naive as far as like, what does virtual EMDR actually look like? But I'm really grateful that we've explored this today. It's been fun.
Yeah, I'm really happy that we had a chance to do this as well. We've been talking about it for doing this for months, but we just couldn't, you know, manage to have our, you know, availability at the same time. So I'm really glad we had a chance to do it.
Yes, absolutely. And Jeff, for those who are trying to learn more about virtual EMDR or other things like that, I'm going to put all those links in the show notes below and things like that. So if you're listening, feel free to open up those show notes and check that out. But anything else for us today, Jeff? Any final words?
Yeah, a couple things. Virtual EMDR is always growing, always changing. We add new programs, we add new protocols, and right now we're working on something that's, you know, honestly, it's pretty cutting edge, and that's a gratitude and appreciation protocol. So one of the problems that a lot of us have in our lives is we have so much, we have such an abundance, but we're totally unable to recognize how much that we have, and, you know, we tend to be in this state of negativity all the time. So that's something that gratitude and abundance EMDR is something that's going to be coming up very soon.
Cool.
The developers are actually, yeah, it's already all written and all put together. The developers are working on it right now, as far as, you know, creating the software. And the only other thing that I want to say is, you know, our program Virtual EMDR is, it's free for the first 3 days. So if you sign up, you can try some sessions on yourself. You can check it out for a few days. If you don't want to be charged, just press the cancel button and that's the end of it. So if people are curious, they can find us at virtualemdr.com.
Sweet.
And sign up and try some sessions out for free.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Well, I'm grateful again for this resource, and it's been a huge pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that I had a chance to be on with you, Trevor. And here's the really cool thing as well. Just randomly through meeting you, I've started listening to your podcast, and I've really been enjoying it.
So. Well, I'm
and
glad.
I wouldn't have found your podcast unless we had connected otherwise about doing this interview. And so it's sort of one of those extra benefits that life throws your way. So,
you know,
thank you for that.
It just seems to happen all the time, man. Like, there's good things happening out in the world all the time. And
yeah.
I'm grateful for us crossing paths.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show, Trevor.
Thank you. Thanks for joining me for another episode of The Art of Healing. Again, as a reminder, the show is not therapy, nor is it a substitute for therapy. If you'd like to learn more about me, my therapy resources, or sign up for my new online course for couples helping to build secure communication and secure relationships, please go to the links in the podcast description or on my Instagram or TikTok. You can also sign up for virtual EMDR through the link in this podcast. Thank you so much again for listening, and I hope you have a